1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We welcome you to Feltus and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Dan, as you are well aware, March Madness is with us. And that is going to be one of our topics today here on Feltus and Kale. So we look forward to that with an outstanding guest, a man who has been a part of March Madness, and we're talking about Coach Gary Waters. So it's going to be a great show, Dan, and looking forward to it.
Me too. Looking forward to having the coach on.
And a little bit later on, we'll be joined by Amy Hall from Granite State Dairy Promotion. So we'll take a break, and then we'll chat with Coach Waters, 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It's Feltus and Kale. Welcome back. Feltus and Kale is presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And our guest today is Coach Gary Waters. His new book is 10 Principles of a Character Coach. And Coach Waters, we welcome you to Feltus and Kale.
Oh, thank you, Ken and Dan. It's great to be here.
Well, it is great to have you with us. And just for our audience, Gary is a longtime college basketball coach, having rebuilt three Division I programs at Kent State, Rutgers, and Cleveland State, where he is that school's all-time winningest head coach. And he's been inducted. Now, get this, Dan. He's been inducted into three, count them, three halls of fame. Who else can say that?
I don't know. It's a lot to keep track of, Gary. I don't know how you do it.
Ferris State, of course, which is Gary's alma mater, Kent State, and the Detroit High School. And Coach Waters, an honor to have you with us on Feltus and Kale. And before we talk about your book, which is terrific, I'd like to get your thoughts on what's transpired so far in the NCAA tournament.
Oh man, it's been outstanding. Yesterday, I posted on my Twitter and Facebook how it's great to be back playing in collegiate athletics in the NCAA playoffs. And with this, you're seeing many upsets and things occurring, and it's just an exciting time.
There's no doubt about it, and of course, this tournament, always has its share of upsets. We missed it last year, of course, with the entire tournament being canceled by COVID. But they have come back this year, and as many, if not more, upsets than we have ever seen in the opening rounds.
Yes, and it has had a big bang, if you want to call it that. And what I think is that the COVID has caused a lot of the things you see occurring out there on the basketball floor.
How's that?
Well, I just think, they're in such a different situation, and the bubbles and all those things create certain situations for each team. And if you can't handle them and you don't come out successful, think about the NBA when they wouldn't make it, and that's because they're in a different situation.
Coach, I don't know if you are comfortable sharing, but given where the brackets are at right now, what is your pick for the Final Four, and what is your pick for the national title in the men's, and then we'll go to the women's?
Okay. Obviously the team that I think is going to win the whole thing is Gonzaga. I think this is the first time in many, many years. It was back to the 70s that you had a mid-major team you go all the way and win.
Yep.
and win a championship. But that's number one. And now they're the only undefeated team, and you go back all the way to Bobby Knight with that. So I think they're going to be there. You have to think Baylor because they got great guard play. And I believe if you got great guards, you got a great chance of making it.
Yep.
The other team that kind of surprises me that I think is very good is Loyola. Loyola's got a great chance. I don't know what bracket, they're connected there, but I think they got a great chance. And a team that came out of nowhere, and they had to deal with this bubble situation, and they had to deal with the pandemic very hard throughout this time, has been Oregon. So those are the teams I think have got a great chance of surprising everyone getting there.
Coach, I agree with you on Oregon. I grew up in Iowa, an Iowa Hawkeye fan. They are so quick, Oregon, well-rounded, and they just took it to the Hawks, and the Hawks have a great team.
Yes, I thought, and when they took it to them the way they took it to them, it just shocked me. Now, once again, I'm going to say, you know, this bubble and this pandemic has created situations that you really don't know. And, you know, I have two of my past, one coach and one past player that are in the Sweet 16 as coaches. And I've talked to each one of them, and each one of them say that this bubble has been something they've never even imagined.
Right.
It's like almost like being in a prison.
Mm. Of course, Loyola, I think, has had a little bit of divine intervention, don't you, Coach Waters?
Oh, yes. Yes, she's done an outstanding job throughout the years. And, you know, it could be their second Final Four in 4 years.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it's one common analogy with them. This is just my perception, is that you need great guards to win in tournament play. But I also say to get to that final round, you need a great post presence.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think Loyola has a very good post presence.
Yeah. No doubt about it. And what about on the women's side? Who's your pick to win the women's tournament?
Well, you know, you got to say that Connecticut's going to be in there. But I had a chance to see the other night Baylor. I love how Baylor moves, and it's just those are the two that I see that stick out in on the women's side.
Yeah.
How about Iowa? Does Iowa have any chance of beating UConn on Saturday?
Please say yes.
See, I'm a UConn fan, and Dan is a fan of the Iowa Hawkeyes, so they're going head-to-head. And you had to be pleased with Rutgers' first tournament victory since 1983 with their big upset win over Clemson.
Oh, I was, I was really excited about that. And, I had two teams in there. I had Cleveland State and on the men's side,
yep.
And Rutgers.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We're chatting with Coach Gary Waters. His new book is 10 Principles of a Character Coach. And I guess, first of all, the basic question is, what made you decide to write this book?
Okay, yeah. You know, when you think about this, it's coming out at the right time.
Yeah.
But I wrote it, a short time ago, but it's been a while. And when I wrote it, you have to go through editors and branding firms, all that kind of stuff to get it going. And once I got it completed and published, it came out at the right time. But when I was finishing up my last year of coaching at the collegiate level, and I'm getting ready to go into retirement, and I said, asked myself, what am I doing in retirement? I said, I've always liked to like writing. Let me try that. So but what made me decide this type of writing was during the time that was happening, the college basketball was going through a lot of ups and downs concerning scandals.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, man, is this what college basketball has been all about, or is this what I have been about? So what I did is I went back, I said, let me go back in history a little bit, see what was meant to happen in college basketball. So what I did was I went to Naismith. If you don't mind, if I read this real quick.
No, not at all. You went back to the
Mason. Mason believed that if you elect to be a coach, it was also your responsibility to be an advisor, counselor, father figure, and to act at all times as an example to the athletes in your care. He also envisioned that sports should develop character, foster patriotism, and instill ethical values that would serve the participants well in later life. And when I read that, when I seen that in the book that I was reading, I said, is this what we've been all about lately? And that's when I said, hey, let me write about this.
And it really hasn't been what the game has been all about. So you want to bring that back, what it should be, what its roots are, and what it's supposed to be all about, correct?
Yes, that's my whole purpose, and in this book, 10 Principles of a Character Coach, I give coaches, I give parents, I give players, I don't even give leaders and businesses information to use to try to bring it back.
Check out the book, 10 Principles of a Character Coach, and Coach Waters, in addition to business leaders and coaches, What about parents out there? You know, my wife Erin and I are blessed to have two wonderful daughters, Iris and Josie, and we're going to watch the Iowa versus UConn women's Sweet 16 showdown on Saturday, and Iris is already talking about basketball. What advice would you give to parents, in terms of basketball, with their kids interested in basketball, or just in sports in general? What advice, what principles, I assume they carry forward, but what core advice would you give to the parents out there listening?
Good question. As parents, the first and foremost thing I believe is that they have to be the player's role model, okay? And I truly believe in that, because when I went into homes, I would tell the parents I couldn't be their child's role model. It must be their parent.
Yeah.
However, I would tell them that I would be an example for your child, that I would provide an example they should see and follow that kind of emulates what they do, so they can be better people and eventually become, you know, success in our society. That's my purpose. But at the same time, you know, if we're talking just basketball, I'm going to say just play as hard as you can play and treat others the way you want to be treated. And I mentioned that as one of the principles in my book that says treat others the way you want to be treated. And when we think about that, that's respect. So if you're out on that floor, you respect the player you're playing against. It don't mean that you don't attack that player and go after that player. Just respect them, and use your own values to create all that.
Now, you had an outstanding playing career at Ferris State. When did you know that you wanted to be a basketball coach, when you wanted to make a career of that?
Well, you know, I honestly, I didn't think I was ever thought about being a coach. I was graduating in business, and then I was doing an internship with General Motors, and I was going to be an executive in General Motors. That was my whole objective. And then all of a sudden, you know, because this was during the summer of my last year, I'm on an internship at General Motors Institute, and I'm doing all this. And I said, this isn't what I really want to do. And at the same time, I had got drafted into the NBA by the Detroit Pistons, so I had to do a trial there. So I had to make a decision. And when I went in and did the trial and didn't make it, I said to myself, do I want to go back and continue to search for this dream of being a professional basketball player, or do I want to go into my profession? And when I thought about it, I said, well, I really don't want to do business. You know, I can do business as I coach. You know what I really want to do? I want to transform lives. And at that moment, I decided I wanted to be a coach.
Wow. Who were the people that inspired you during your formative years? I'm sure some people who inspired you to become the person and ultimately the coach that you turned out to be.
Well, obviously, you know, I'm going to say my parents, because they allowed me to move in that direction. But as coaches, you know, I had some good examples. I had a guy by the name of Jim Wink, who's the all-time winningest coach in Ferris State history, that took me under his wing and really taught me, you know, just taught me the areas of life and how to put them together as a character person. And then, you know, in the profession itself, you know, I had some pretty good examples. You know, when you think about it, you know, I had a close relationship with Dean Smith at North Carolina, because we used to both belong to Nike and do all that, and I got a chance to know him extremely well, and I learned he was the ultimate character coach. But in my philosophy, in creating teams and success, so I really looked at John Wooden, because he really showed me what all this was all about and how to be a character person. And then the last person I'm going to mention is John Thompson. I followed a lot of his ideology.
So, now, who believed in you? Who gave you your first coaching job? And I know you were an assistant for quite some time before you got a head coaching job.
You know, that's a great question, because, you know, you have to have someone believe in you in order to move forward in this profession. And I was at Eastern Michigan as the top assistant head coach there. And then I came across a guy by the name of Lane Kennedy. great name. He was a great athletic director at Kent State. And Lang, now you need to understand this, I'm still the only college basketball coach that received a job in the conference that he was in without any affiliation. Now, I know you're wondering what that means. You know, most times when a person is in a conference, they're going for a job, they have some affiliation with that job. They either played there, they either worked there, they either know someone there. I had none of that with Kent State, and we were in the same conference. Think about a conference like you said, Iowa in the Big Ten.
Yep.
They hire one of the assistant coaches at one of the other teams in the conference. They just don't do that. You know, they're going to hire within, or they're going to hire someone with a great name. And I had a person that believed in me and just said, hey, you know, I want to give you an opportunity because this is what you seem like you had the right, and this is the key to it. He said to me, it seemed like you had the right character to do this job.
Yep. Certainly, that is a big issue that transcends regardless of the profession, you know, whether it's politics, public service, coaching, you name it. So, Coach, college basketball has changed quite a bit over the years.
Yes.
No doubt about it. And there's more money in it now than ever. And there's an ongoing conversation and discussion about how that translates and filters down to the student athletes. And there's some debate and discussion out there, as you, I'm sure you're aware of whether or not student athletes, in addition to a scholarship, get some modicum of pay rather than like the front office or the boosters and all this other stuff where the money sometimes goes. Do you have any thoughts on that debate and discussion?
Well, I have big thoughts. I don't know if you know in your reading, I don't know if I mentioned it in there. Yeah, I think I did, but I belong to the NABC, and that was the National Association of Basketball Coaches. So I had an opportunity to work with the NCAA quite often. So, you know, I learned a great deal from that aspect. And what I don't think America knows, the community knows, is that players are actually getting money to go to college. Now, what do I mean by that? You know, they're getting a scholarship and tuition and books. You know that. And they get all that and room and board. However, it had to be maybe about 5-6 years ago, they came up with what is called a per diem, or not a per diem, but it's a way to give them extra money to make it through college. And what occurred was, it was a player at Connecticut that complained that at night that they didn't have the food and they couldn't eat, they didn't have any money if they wanted to go to a show or something of that magnitude. And at that time, the NCAA made a move. And the move is actually pretty prevalent when I say this, because what they said is, because they don't have in that extra, and they looked at how the whole system is devised, they made a decision that we're going to give them the extra that they need that they don't receive in their scholarship. So in a scholarship, you're going to usually get about 80% of your scholarship. You know, what it takes for you to go to school at that in that city and institution. So what is happening with that 20%? So what I'm saying is that 80% makes up your room, board, tuition, and books. Then there's an 80%, which is, you know, cost of living, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, that has not been a part of the scholarship. So they've added that to it. Now, how did they add it to it? What they did is say, if you had a particular school in a particular environment, what does it cost to live in that environment? And let's say it's $1,000 to live in that environment, they give you $800. They will pay the other $200. And so players today are getting checks. And I'm talking about on the avenue of $4,000, $3,000, $5,000 extra. Now, this is not counting if you're a Pell Grant recipient or any of that magnitude. Extra just to be an athlete. So they're actually giving you something. And when I think of that, if I went to college and someone gave me a check for $5,000 beyond all my other stuff being paid for, don't you think you'd be happy going out there? But on the same token, on the same note of that, there are areas that they should make changes, and they've made some, like in likeness. The because the person is working for his own likeness, and they should be able to be compensated for their likeness. And I think there's going to be some other areas they're going to work at.
Yep.
I remember when Chris Webber was, quoted as saying, he didn't have money for a Big Mac, but they were making money off his likeness, selling his jerseys across the street in the sporting goods store, So, they were making money off Chris Webber, but at the time, he wasn't making any money.
And when you think about that, that's wrong, but that's our society, and that's how it works. And when you add money to society or to anything, something happens that goes in, if you want to call it, a negative direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Our great guest is Gary Waters, the new book, 10 Principles of a Character Coach, Feldison Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion. We'll take just a quick break. Be right back with Coach Gary Waters. 103.9, 1450 WKXL and HTalkRadio.com. Feldison Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Coach Gary Waters is our guest. His new book, 10 Principles of a Character Coach. And what's your best definition of a character coach, Coach Waters?
Well, very good. Very good question. And when I thought about it, I created one in my mind. And what I believe, it's a person that strives, works at it, to achieve high moral and ethical values in all areas of their life. Without compromise. Now that's the key to it, without compromise. It means you don't get to choose when you want to show these morals and ethics. It should be in all parts of your life. How you communicate, what you do, how you represent, all these things should show some form of character.
Well, that's a very good definition. No doubt about that. And that would be true in every walk of life, not just basketball, every walk of life.
Exactly. And the big key to it is, what I said earlier, is without compromise. Because, our society and our world will put us in a position or in a place where we may have to decide if we should compromise something or not. That your values and your character should never be compromised. Or allowed to be a compromise.
Coach, all 10 of these principles are critically important, but one that kind of jumps out to me is principle number 8, empower and serve. And you start that chapter with a quote from John Maxwell, American author, speaker, and pastor, that says, "Leaders become great not because of their power, but because of their ability to empower others." And that is really, I think, poignant recommendation for leaders in all contexts. And can you talk about how you put that into practice as a coach and a leader?
Very good. When I coach, I believe that I needed to empower the people under my supervision. That doesn't only mean a player. That means coaches, managers, even my secretary. I wanted to empower them to believe they could be the best they could become if they're allowed to be in that position. And as coaches, what I did with them is I put them in position in teaching the game and working with the players so they understood how to be the best they could be for their future. And I really put a lot of emphasis on that, and I served them in that regard. I made sure that it wasn't all about me. And in our society, oftentimes, if you're the leader, you take total control and it's all about you.
Right.
It should be. It should be about the people that work under you.
Yep. And too often, it may be about title, regardless of what it is, and not about empowering and lifting others up. And I see that principle transcending to public service, to the business environment, you name it. And I think that principle really gets the best out of people, don't you think?
I truly believe that. I truly believe. But, I'm going to shift a little here. The one that I really think is great is Principle 5. And the reason why I say Principle 5 is because when you look at everything in our society, if we just love more, just love each other more, love others more, then things would be much better in our society.
Yep.
And I put that in there, and I put it in there for parents, I put it in there for players, and primarily because some of our players didn't have that kind of love coming up. And they literally were from single-parent homes and didn't really have some of those things. So I wanted to give them an example of what love really looked like within a relationship. And I did it with my wife and my family so they could see it. So one day when they aspire to have these things, they know what it looks like.
So that would be your number one principle, if you will, but principle number five, love unconditionally.
No, you know, I can't go beyond number one.
Okay. Gotcha.
God over everything. Right. Now, you need to know why I put that in there.
Yeah.
I believe that, but I also wanted people, coaches, players, parents to understand that we get caught up in ourselves too much.
Yeah.
And there's something higher than us. And so if you want to be the person you want to be, you have to understand that.
Yep.
We mentioned your first coaching job, head coaching job, was at Kent State, and then it was on to New Jersey and Rutgers University, and then on to Cleveland State for your longest tenure as a head coach. What were some of the differences in coaching in those different areas? I would imagine Kent State and Cleveland State were maybe quite similar, but when you go to Piscataway, New Jersey, and coach at Rutgers, was that a different kind of environment?
Totally. When I say that, I'm completing another book right now, and it's called Coaching Millennials from a Character Perspective. So I'm talking about millennials. And when I started at Rutgers, my last year at Kent State was when the millennials were prevalent in the coaching profession. And then it went on through Rutgers, and it went on through Cleveland State. And so, you know, it was a totally different because, you know, at Kent State, you had players that followed the rules, the guidelines. You know, I give you an example. You have two coaches that I have talked with in the past is the primary reason why they got out of the profession. Think about Bobby Knight. Bobby Knight was one of the best college coaches that ever coached the game. And for him to leave the game that he loved was tough, but he just said, I can't deal with many of these kids today. And I'm a little different in that respect because I don't think it's the kids. I think it's the change that's happened in the parents. I think the parents have allowed certain things to happen in society that now the kids have just picked up and taken on to another level. And, you know, obviously, technology has come in and changed everything. But on the same token, I believe that the kids today were different in each era. Like when I was at Kent State, they were different. Then when I went to Rutgers, they were much different. And then when I went to Cleveland State, they were even different. So, you know, that was a change I've seen throughout the time.
Well, if you had to look back and look to a couple of highlights, what were a couple of the big highlights in your coaching career?
Well, each place I had a big highlight, okay? And if I can give it to you, like at Kent State, in my last year there, my fifth and final year, and I had one earlier, but my fifth and final year, we won the league and we won the championship and went on to the NCAA. And then we played Indiana in the first round, who was number five in the country, and we upset them. And it was a great, great win for the university, for the community, for everyone. And something I'll never forget. When I went to Rutgers, my third year there, because I was only there 5 years, my third year, we went to the finals at the NIT, postseason NIT, and at that time, the NIT was really, really good because for us to get there, we had to beat Temple. We had John Tate Cheney. We had to beat Villanova, who had Gene Wright. We had to beat West Virginia, who had Beeline, just to get to the finals. Then we got to the finals, the Final Four, and we beat Iowa State in there. And then we played for the championship against Michigan. And that was one of the most unique things you ever seen. We had that arena at Madison Square Garden seats close to 22,000.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we're in New Jersey now.
Yep.
15,000 of those fans were Rutgers fans, all in red, just screaming and
hollering. Wow. Yeah.
Well, you can tell how great that was.
Sure, absolutely.
And then at Cleveland State, my third year there, we went to the NCAA. And And we ended up, something they hadn't done in 20 years. Mackey was the last person that went to the NCAA there. And then we played Wake Forest, who was number 4 in the country, and we upset them and went on. And I just think, we had some great wins during those times.
I guess you did. And I tell you what, I'm glad you're working on another book so we can have you back on the show at some point. You're a terrific guest. You obviously have the respect of some of the great coaches in the game. So many terrific endorsements of your book from the likes of Jay Wright, you just mentioned, Bill Self, Tom Izzo, Tubby Smith, and Coach K himself, Mike Krzyzewski.
Oh, yes. They are great coaches, and they represent what character is all about.
There's no doubt about it. It's a terrific book, Coach Waters. 10 Principles of a Character Coach, Gary Waters. And thank you so much for spending some time with us here on Feldis and Kale. We really appreciate it.
Well, I enjoyed it immensely, and you got a great show going on. Gentlemen, you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you, Coach, and thank you for being here.
And we look forward to having you back after you've written your next book.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care. That is Coach Gary Waters, and boy, he is, he's been around. He's got so many stories, so many experiences in his collegiate coaching career. He still is a very, very vibrant guy. There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
It's Feldis and Kale, and we are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And with any luck at all,
I think that's calling in.
I heard the phone ringing, and I hope it's Amy Hall.
Just
Amy.
A couple minutes ago, is it Amy?
It is Amy.
Wow.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Great timing.
Really, it was terrific timing. And Amy, of course, the executive director of Granite State Dairy Promotion, and we are proudly presented by the Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers here on Feldis and Kale. So, Amy, I guess the burning question today is, when does the ice cream trail begin?
Isn't that always the burning question?
We got to get the scoop on it.
Absolutely. The New Hampshire Ice Cream Trail is released every single year annually on the Friday before Memorial Day weekend. So it's sort of the unofficial kickoff to New Hampshire summer. Or we like to pat ourselves on the back and think that we're the ones who kick off summer with the ice cream trail map.
Well, I'm practicing before I actually go on the ice cream trail. I've practiced at a few local ice cream stands already. So,
it's kind of like training for a marathon, right? You can't just go in and run 26 miles right off the bat. You've got to start small, start to build yourself up. So I respect that, Ken. I truly do.
Yeah, I've practiced on at least a couple in the greater Concord area over the last week or so. So, glad to say that some of the shops that close in the wintertime have reopened, and others still are yet to open, but we look forward to the official start of the ice cream trail. And what year is this, Amy, for the ice cream, the New Hampshire ice cream trail?
This is year 9.
Wow.
So next year, we're going to have to do something. I mean, I don't know how much bigger and better we can get with this, but we'll have to do something special. Although this year, we do have a little something special on the map.
Oh, yeah. What's
that? A little different. 2020 being sort of difficult, we've added a bit of a side quest on the ice cream trail map. So we have one particular ice cream shop, and their name is actually Super Secret Ice Cream, and they are only open one day a week, Sundays, for a handful of hours at the Littleton Farmers Market.
Wow.
So
that is super secret.
It is super secret. So this is going to be a challenge for a lot of people. And I just want to be clear that because we recognize that it is a challenge for some people to get there on a Sunday, it will not count against their completed passport.
Ah.
So we wanted to add something fun and unique and a twist. And it support also a local farmer's market. This ice cream trail map isn't, I mean, of course it's about ice cream, right? We can't deny that. It's filled with great information about the dairy industry that provide a lot of light bulb moments for people, which we're proud of. But it's also very, very much about our local mom and pop shops. It's about our local farmers market. It's about the importance of travel and tourism in this state. And I really believe that this ice cream trail map brings so many industries and so many people and families together in so many different areas. So we look forward to this every single year.
That's absolutely right. I mean, one of the vibrant elements of travel and tourism in New Hampshire, in part agritourism, in part our local farms, in part farmers markets, our local dairy producers, our local farms are critical to all of that and critical to this ice cream trail. So when does it start up again, Amy?
Memorial Day weekend in 2021. So you will maybe see me out in the brand new Granite State Dairy Promotion van traveling across the state myself.
Is it powered by milk?
I mean, it should be. You know what? Environmentally, I feel like this is something that could and should be researched. Can we really fuel up vehicles with milk? I just think that would be amazing. Although you could power cars by methane. That's a thing people are looking into.
That's true.
Wow. So, a new vehicle. Wow, that's impressive.
Oh, it is impressive, and we can discuss that in a second. But in order to get these ice cream trail maps distributed, one of my favorite parts is sort of the exhale moment that I personally have. I get to drive all around the state to deliver the maps to every rest area, every New Hampshire state rest area. They don't have mailing addresses, so it's nice. I get to drive by Mount Washington. I get to go up in the Carroll County to North Conway, to the Scenic Vista, down to the Seacoast. It's a really nice moment to exhale and say, here we go, small businesses. We've got people coming your way.
That is so great. And, you know, this, as you mentioned, this is a great adjunct to tourism in the state of New Hampshire, because it's not only New Hampshire residents who follow the New Hampshire Ice Cream Trail.
Ken, you're so right. Every year when the passports come in, and in the past you and I have worked together drawing the winner, we'll probably do this again this year, and Dan, you can be a part of it as well. It's a fun thing to draw the grand prize winner. How many trail maps we get with Vermont addresses and Massachusetts addresses. For a lot of people. And the other thing I just wanted to mention is a lot of these ice cream shops, too, they have ancillary businesses on the side. So it might be, you know, they offer fried clams like Sorrel's Dairy Bar in Guilford. They're joining us this year.
Nice.
So it's an opportunity to support folks in different ways. Deverant Farm Products, you know, they have a flower stand, so you can purchase there. Hatchland Farm, Connolly Brothers Dairy, Sanctuary Dairy Farm, our very own dairy farms where you can go get ice cream, visit with the cows, and buy their products, buy their cheese, buy their milk. So again, I think, you know, I don't want to beat it to death, but this is really quite beneficial to travel and tourism, and every single entity, but especially coming out of 2020, really could use a little bit of extra love and support.
Well, everyone knows New Hampshire is the best place to visit. And you layer upon that the ice cream trail. How could it get better than that?
I really do. I don't believe it does. I'd like to have someone try to show me how it does.
Now, you mentioned the new vehicle, but we're going to take a quick break here, Amy, and then get back and we'll talk about the new vehicle that people should be on the lookout for. It's Feldis and Kale, and we are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers right here at 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. It's Feldis and Kale, and we're heading down the home stretch of this edition of the program. Amy Hall is with us from our great presenting sponsor, Granite State Dairy Promotion, and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Now, Amy, we have a few minutes left in the show. I want you to tell us about the new official vehicle of the Granite State Dairy Promotion.
Oh, I'm so excited, and so should every other motorist on the road, because I never once had a position pulling a 16-foot trailer behind a Ram 25 under pickup truck. So motorists everywhere across New Hampshire can be quite thankful that we have a new vehicle for a couple different reasons. We now have one compact van unit that acts as a refrigeration unit, and we have a small freezer in there, and you'll be able to see us. One of our major partners in New Hampshire that we're so proud of is Millennium Running. So we believe wholly, as does 20-plus scientific studies, that chocolate milk is a superior sports recovery beverage. So now that races are up and running again, we have a van getting retrofitted and a new wrap on it. Look for us there, because we are going to have some of New Hampshire's best chocolate milk at the end of every race.
Look forward. I look forward to the day that chocolate milk is on the sidelines of every sporting event rather than Gatorade.
Oh, I, you know, Dan, I'm glad you said that. I agree. And we're getting there. The New Hampshire Interscholastic Athletic Association, another very proud partnership that we have. Athletic directors love chocolate milk. It's just so much healthier for kids. And I've said it before, if you're healthy and fit, for me personally, Gatorade looks like a liquid glue stick snapped into a bottle. I just don't feel comfortable putting that in my healthy body.
So who was going, you know, we mentioned this before on the show. I think you were with us, Amy, at the time. Who's going to be the first coach to get doused by chocolate milk instead of Gatorade?
We've got to figure it out.
Dan, back me up here. I think we put you in charge of that, Ken.
No, I'm in charge of that? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I have a couple people in mind.
I'm thinking it'd be tough to do it. I mean, I'm trying to think about hockey, and, you know, it'd be tough to do it on the ice. I mean, I might discolor the ice or whatever, but I think it could be cleaned up. But I'm thinking more like football, baseball, perhaps, maybe soccer. So if there are any volunteers out there, any coaches that want to be, you know, and I think, honestly, I think this is something that would be newsworthy. I mean, the Gatorade has become commonplace with coaches being doused with Gatorade professionally, collegiately, high school. But, you know, I think it would
it's
be
time for something new.
It would be newsworthy if somebody was doused after a championship with, you know, chocolate milk.
And it's healthy.
Yes.
It is healthy. And you know what? I mean, in Indianapolis, where the winner drinks a big bottle of milk, it's time for New Hampshire to have our own thing.
Right.
I think we should be dousing coaches in chocolate milk, Ken. I'm with you 100%. Let's get this rolling.
And you know, the first time it happens, it's going to make news. There's no doubt about it, you know. And I think it's great and should be, you know, the Granite State Dairy promotion that's involved with it. So that I think it's something that we're going to try to accomplish. Our goals are lofty here on Feldis and Kale, Amy, as you can tell. So
we love you, and I cannot tell you, our dairy farmers would get such a kick out of that, and they would appreciate it. They're easily humored, and they love that level of support. So anything we can do to put a smile on their face certainly will put a smile on all of ours as well.
You got it.
So we know when the ice cream trail is going to begin. Now, can people start picking up their brochures at this point, or is it a little while off?
Oh, no. We keep this protected, Ken, under lock and key until Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
Nobody's allowed a jump start on this,
okay.
Not even me.
Very good. Very good. So wait, you have to be patient, but you can practice. You know, visiting these different places before then, it just won't count as far as visiting them during the time that the ice cream trail is going on. But it's always a great time of year. We always look forward to it. The ninth year, I mean, and boy, it doesn't seem that long ago. I know I was there for the very beginning, and I hope you'll let Dan and I select the big prize winners this time around, Amy.
Absolutely. You guys can count on it. I would love nothing more.
All right. Well, Amy, always great to chat with you. And, you know, today, by the way, every day is designated as something. And today is International Waffle Day.
Ooh.
And, you know, it doesn't mean waffling as far as politics are concerned. It means actually eating a waffle. So, you know what? I was just thinking about this when I saw that last night. That nothing goes better with a nice waffle than a tall glass of cold milk, in my opinion. So think about that when you eat your waffle on International Waffle Day.
And a local milk. You got it.
Yeah. Let me add to that with a scoop of vanilla ice cream with some Hampshire maple syrup.
Oh, boy. You know how to live, Amy. You really do. You really
I know
do.
What I'm doing after the show.
Amy, thanks so much, and we'll talk with you next week.
Gentlemen, thank you. Have a great week.
Take care, Amy.
You know, Dan, that's going to do it for this edition of Feldis and Kale. The shows fly by quicker all the time.
You know what? The time flies when you're having fun. And you know what's going to be really fun on Saturday? When the Iowa Hawkeye women's team beat your UConn Huskies.
I was waiting for that. Dan Feldis, Ken Kale, Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers.